Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, here we go, here we go.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
Mr. Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Start the show, they said.
Yes, sir. Let's go. Yes, sir. Woo!
There it is. We are official Talking Sports with the 12th Man on September the 12th. Coming to you on Wednesday, not Tuesday, not Sunday, but right smack dab in the middle of the week. We got time to digest NFL. We got time to kind of digest the first week. It's been a lot of things happening. Fantasy football, man, we are having some fun. I'd like to check in with my fellas who may take a knee, but they're going to come right back in the second half and do some heroics. Mr. JQ, how you feeling this evening, sir? Yeah, like that.
Oh, man, I can't complain. I can't complain. I got a little good news this week that I am in line to work my first Georgia State football game on the 22nd.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So I'm a little pumped about that, trying to get on with Georgia State. So trying to keep it pushing and move up and, you know, up and beyond. So I'm doing good, man. I'm doing a little good. How you doing?
Like I said, man, I want to be like JQ when I grow up, man, because apparently that's the way to go, man. Just hanging out, man. He's taking trips and stuff like that. I mean, Rob is international, you know, but, you know, JQ, man, you're just living the dream, bro. So, yeah, okay. All right.
Hey, man, I'm just trying to keep grinding.
That's what's up. Mr. T-Bob, Rob Ford, how you feeling this evening, sir? Rob? What happened to Rob? Rob?
Uh-oh.
Oh, I'm here. I'm sorry. Yeah, everything is going great.
Wake up, man. Come on, man.
Got a great Mexican meal in tonight. You know, you're in Texas. You got to get a little bit of that in. Yeah. So
clearly, that's why you're
sleeping.
That's why you're
sleeping. Yeah, got that Tex-Mex in and now you're ready to go lay it down. Lay it down. Sorry.
I had to make some coffee. I ain't gonna lie, man. I'm ready to roll, but still, man, I had to get myself some caffeination, man. But it's all good. Hey, we're gonna have some fun.
Oh man, wake up,
gentlemen.
Man! Stop being lazy, dude.
How's that being lazy, bro? Whenever I sat there and said that I rushed home to accommodate you, bro. You know what I'm saying? So I could have kept
it. You said you were rushing.
Yeah. I was. Anyway, we're gonna have some fun. Rob's in rare form because his Saints lost, man. So that's okay, man. So we're gonna have some fun with this, man.
I know, and we gave up 48 points in the loss too.
I know, man.
To
Ryan
Fitzpatrick.
Ryan,
made
we're gonna talk
look
about
all world.
Is this a quarterback controversy?
Even let him scramble for a 3rd and 13 first down.
Oh man, that's
he
can
always be that
man. It's crazy, man. So, you know, we're talking about making football great, man. You know, so
there we go. I like that.
The theme song from back in the day.
Frozen tundra, man.
The autumn wind was a raider. Killer team. Thunder was, hey, man, that NFL film was a jump.
Go, JQ.
Hey, man, listen. You remember that? The Olive Wind was a Raider? I said, come on, man.
Oh, man.
He killed it with that one.
That was some great music, man, and some great, like, commentary on that, too, man. So we're talking about making football great again in America. That's what we do, man. So, you know, I'd have to love America, but just making football great, as we always do. But really quickly, let's throw out some numbers here. I'm really hoping that my barber, Alex, will call in because we had a really passionate conversation about Matt Ryan and all that fun stuff, too. You know, he's a Broncos fan, by the way. He always wants to, like, you know, feel like he was trying to get me goaded, man, like Rob tried to do, man. So it's pretty passionate. Get your thoughts about that. But
we know you're sore spots.
Oh, yeah.
It's all good. I'm just saying, you know, I try to keep things in perspective and try to, you know, keep things contained. But it's all good. So let's talk about this. But really quickly, guys. The number to call into the show, especially you, Alex, I hope you're listening in. I'd send them all the show links, all that fun stuff. 424 563-9519. Always call your boys. Trigger has no heart, so don't come with that weak foolishness because we'll cut you off, just like I cut off Rob. And follow us on Twitter at 12THMAN Sports.
That was
a joke.
And then
finally we're on Facebook. Facebook.com. No, it was not a joke. Facebook.com/12ManSports, or if you do Talking Sports with the 12th Man, you will find that as well. Hey, let's wrap up. So we're going to kind of briefly talk about some college football here. Begrudgingly, I'll let Rob kind of do a quick recap with college football for week two. And Kyler Murray, man, just killing it, man. Just 300 yards, 65, like, you know, nuts, five touchdowns, man. I mean, just amazing. The redshirt junior here doing his thing, man. Which is fantastic too, man. So, you know, join an impressive list of Oklahoma quarterbacks if you want to say that as well. But, Rob, go to that quick recap on college football week number two.
All right, I'll, you know, for the most part, just recap the two top 25 matchups from this past weekend. And we briefly talked about Georgia and South Carolina on last week's show. And I had the estimation that this game was going to be a lot closer than what it actually turned out to be. Boy, was I wrong, because Georgia opened up a can of whoop-ass on them and just really dominated that football game in every facet. And actually, I was very impressed with Georgia, I have to admit. And I actually thought they should have moved up to the number two spot with the way they played in that game. I actually thought they should have leapfrogged Clemson in that game just for the way they just dominated South Carolina. And, you know, South Carolina was coming in the game with a progressive offense, and I thought the game was going to be a lot closer than what it actually was. So I was thoroughly impressed with Georgia and the way they played, and Kirby Smart is just building a machine right now from the way it looks. And I hate to admit that because I hate the Bulldogs, but, you know, you have to give credit where credit is due. And the next matchup, Stanford and USC, that one kind of went a little bit closer to what I envisioned. KJ Costello, the quarterback for Stanford, controlled the game. Off the Stanford, you know, controlled the line of scrimmage, and they were really dominant on defense. And of course, USC is going to have a few growing pains at the quarterback position, even though JT Daniels is ultra talented, and a lot of people actually compare him to Sam Darnold. But he's actually a high school senior playing as a freshman in college right now. So he's extremely young, and they're just going to have some growing pains with them to, you know, help build them and get to that level of being the elite college quarterback. And they struggled with moving the ball and scoring points, obviously, with losing 17-3 to Stanford. So for the most part, that's my college football recap. Just wanted to really touch on those two matchups.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I thought the South Carolina would give Georgia more fits, especially being at home. But, yeah, like you said, give Georgia a ton of credit. They just flat out whooped up on South Carolina. They didn't leave any doubt that they definitely had the class of the SEC East. So, you know, that was a little surprising to me. The USC Stanford, I thought the USC would have a better showing. They have so many athletes. But you talked about Costello, and you were right, Rob. I thought USC would play them a tougher game, especially with Bryce Young still being hampered. But, you know, he was the difference in that game. The one I wanted to talk about was, you know, Clemson surviving, and that's what you call it,
yes.
I mean, surviving against Texas A&M. It looks like they tried to sit on that lead, and Texas A&M with Ramon, I forget the quarterback there for Texas A&M, you know, he made some really quality throws. But he got lucky, too, at the end with the tip, and then they missed the two-point conversion that would have tied it up. But, you know, you're going to have games like that, and you have those a lot of times when you're ready to try to get to a championship against a team that you should beat, and you have to find ways to win. And again, I'm not a Tiger fan, with all these new age Clemson fans, like they've been great since forever. They've been great for like 5 years, but you know, that's a different story. But you know, I gotta give Dabo a lot of credit. You talk about Kirby, what he's building. Dabo definitely has that machine going when it comes to, and he found the way to win. I poo-pooed on Arizona State's performance in that first week, but you know,
Herm Edwards
beat Michigan State 16-13 in a bum fight. Anytime you get a 16-13 college football game, that is a bum fight. But they found the way to win.
We played to win the game.
There you go. And, you know, it's 6 weeks. It'll just be a W on the
schedule.
So I'm gonna give Herm credit. I mean, he's fucking go back. You know what he's doing at Arizona State is what we thought someone was gonna do in Arizona because Khalil Tate. Oh
yes.
My gosh, it looks just
yeah. What is going on there?
Himself.
Arizona losing to Houston, losing to BYU the first 2 weeks. We thought they were gonna have a much better showing with Sumlin and Khalil Tate, and off to a rocky start. I mean, Houston destroyed those people.
Yeah, they really did, yeah. And I talked about them in the Pac-12 South being able to be not necessarily win, but be a spoiler. But I'm looking 100% wrong on that. I have no idea what's going on down there in Scottsdale or wherever they are in Arizona. That's just
watch
that's,
Arizona
that's,
State.
That's
they look like the second best team, or right there with USC.
They really
might
do.
Be a surprise.
And again, yeah, you always but, I talked about it in the beginning. You always have those teams that come out of nowhere. You always have one sleeper. I don't think they get all the way up the college football playoff. But in terms of the Pac-12, nobody saw them coming like that for what they're doing right now. I mean, they still got to go through some more heavy hitters. But so far, so good in the Herm Edwards era down there in Arizona State and Tempe.
I'm rooting
for
him.
Yeah, I am too. So, yeah, he gets disrespected a lot because of that. But, you know, he coached some really good Jets teams. And they didn't always finish, but, I mean, they were still in the conversation. So I'll give him credit for that. So that, to me, was the takeaway from college football this past weekend, you know. Some of the heavyweights either pounding, finding a way to survive, and upstarting Arizona State, beating the Big Ten. I told you that Big Ten East is not looking good so far. You know, at the terms of those top teams.
And Michigan State struggled week one as well.
Yep.
It's interesting too, like you talked about that. Both of you had some good points, and just it seems like Herm Edwards has like a calming presence on that squad, man. Just it's kind of interesting. He reminds me of that, you know, that dad. So he just has a nice calming presence because he's like, you know, I said if he's stay close, we're going to pull it out, and then they were right, man. So just having that presence that he brings is really great for that school too, man. So, you know, again, it's interesting for that. And I got to agree with you too, JQ, regarding Texas A&M. I mean, so right now they went up and just kind of shows the difference as far as how coaching makes a huge difference. I mean, Clemson had that, you know, NFL-style defense, and then, you know, Mond's going to look like a true prospect here the way that he played. And this is a one situation, guys, where it's like a win-win, right? Even though they lost, I think Texas A&M won, right? Because they literally proved their mettle against, you know, Clemson. So, you know, I don't know if the Clemson has some holes or that Jimbo Fisher kind of doing this thing, man. So if you're a Texas A&M fan, this is kind of how you roll. That's a good call, too. But, I mean, I know they kind of shortened the game. But still, this is kind of why you pay Jimbo Fisher over Texas A&M, right? You're going to basically get some more good recruits. And keep an eye on them, man, because now they are definitely going to be in, a contender as well, too. So there's some good calls about that. Hilarious about – we talked about Georgia, too, Georgia, South Carolina. I think Georgia was kind of zero-focused in. Kirby had them ready to play, as you mentioned, Rob. And DeAndre Baker, whenever he dropped that touchdown, if you will, they said that he was doing like a lot of touchdown drills in practice, man. So I wonder what Kirby did for him. So I guarantee he's never going to drop that ball in front of the end zone again, man. So that was kind of crazy too, man. So just a little FYI as far as that too. But good calls, gentlemen, and nice recaps as far as a good weekend here. Iowa just edges Iowa State. Oh, I guess we could talk about that. I don't know if you want to touch base on that, Jake. You're going to rob the handle that. I'll let you pick it up, and we'll talk about Oklahoma and Kyler Murray as well.
Man, Rob always drops us this nugget of what are we doing? Why are we talking about Iowa and Iowa State? I feel him trying to reach out to the heartland.
You got to please your listeners all over the country.
He's trying to reach out to the heartland.
Throw him in there.
Smoke weed every day. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I'll let him have that. I mean, that's a big battle in the state of Iowa. And Iowa State, you know, really shocked some people last year with the third-string quarterback coming in. And giving them some big victories last year, but you know that's a heated rivalry in that state. They just us getting a lot of national attention. But you know, shout out to the Big Ten for winning one of those, you know, Power Five, you know, inner conference matchups. But in the big scheme of things, not gonna matter.
Yeah, shout out to the Seattle Storm and the WNBA winning the WNBA championship.
30
so.
Points.
Throw that out there. Congratulations to them.
That's
you know, on a professional
right.
basketball team in Seattle right now. But basically, in the Iowa game, when you look at the results of that game, it was really defense. Iowa forced a lot of turnovers. They controlled the line of scrimmage. It was an ugly game. but they were able to pull it out. And Kirk Ferentz, you know, one of the more underrated coaches in college football. Like I said, they dominated the line of scrimmage. They're always going to be tough in the trenches. And like I said, they forced a lot of turnovers and did just enough offensively to beat Iowa State 13-3.
I have no idea why Rob put it in there. All right. So let's talk about that. That's a good call. I like that. Let's talk about this, you know, Kyler Murray again, you know, College Football Player of the Week. Oklahoma cruises by UCLA. Rob, is this a game that you thought was going to be actually closer, or did you kind of, like, think it was going to end up like this with Oklahoma?
Well, I expected Oklahoma to win the game. Did I think they could win the game by at least 2 to 3 touchdowns? Absolutely. I don't know if I saw 49-21, but obviously Chip Kelly doesn't have his pieces in place yet for what he's looking for there at UCLA, and it may take him a while. Obviously, the talent is in his backyard right there in Los Angeles. Obviously, you got to recruit against USC in L.A., as well as every other school in the Pac-12 and even really across the country. But Kyler Murray obviously was outstanding. Obviously, you know, threw for 306 yards and accounted for 5 scores in that game. Mm-hmm. Talking about a guy who was also a first-round pick in the Major League Baseball draft as well. So he's a tremendous athlete. So obviously starting off so far, still early, but it don't look like Oklahoma has missed the beat so far from the quarterback perspective. Obviously we'd like to see him against some tougher competition and see how he translates. But so far so good. One thing I will say about Oklahoma, I think they're better defensively this year than they have been the last couple of years, which could be a good thing for them to possibly get into the college football playoff. They were a little down defensively here the last couple of years. This year, it seems to be better on that side of the football, so they could have a chance to get back to the college football playoff. They have a chance. They still look like the favorite in the Big 12.
They're saying there's a chance.
Yes, I agree. I didn't think UCLA had a chance. Unless, you know, no disrespect to my hometown UC Bearcats, but once they let Cincinnati come into LA and beat them in the season opener, I knew they didn't have a shot in the dark at going into Norman and beating Oklahoma. So that result is not surprising to me at all. Kyler Murray is doing what Kyler Murray is going to be able to do against that level of competition. He's a dynamic athlete, and his running skills are just flat-out ridiculous. But what's going to happen, though, is when that competition tightens up, if they're able to sneak into the college football playoff, and I still have reservations about that, is they're going to try to make him a pocket passer and kind of give you that must rush like they used to do against Michael Vick when he was against, you know, upper-tier defenses where we're not going to, you know, come at him all wild, because if you give him lanes to run, he's going to beat you and beat you really bad. But if you kind of just push that pocket and must rush him in there and, you know, kind of keep that U around him and make him a pocket passer, I think that that's when you see more struggle. So I think he's going to do that against lesser competition. But when he steps up against some bigger boys with some better defenses that have a better game plan, I think they'll be able to neutralize him.
All right. Heard it here first. Like I said, the good news is that Robert Shaver's coach is no longer there with Bob Stoops, man. So we'll see how Oklahoma pulls it off or anything like that.
That was
too,
your boy,
so,
Dre.
Obviously, a lot of luck.
Big game, Bob.
All right. Yeah. Back in the day.
Stoops in Kentucky doing some things while he went on the road and upset Florida.
Yeah, man, I love it.
That's crazy. Mm. Yeah.
Mark
man.
Stoops.
Mm. There it is. At least one Stoops is getting it done. Hey, let's get some college football predictions in here. Let's talk about number 12, LSU, my favorite squad for my Falcon players, Rob, and number 7, Auburn. So go ahead and get it up, man. Let's talk up our Tigers, Rob. Do it, bro.
the LSU Tigers, that is. You know, they're going against the Auburn Tigers, so it'll be a battle of the Tigers here. Obviously, my heart is here with LSU, and would love to see LSU win this game. But I'm still not sold just yet. I'm still not totally impressed. Obviously, from a defensive standpoint, first 2 weeks they've looked pretty good. I mean, they beat Southeastern Louisiana 38-1-0, but I mean, you're supposed to beat that school, you know, probably by more than that. Offensively, I'm still not sold on LSU just yet. Joe Burrow's week 1 against Miami, 11 out of 24, you know, he held it together, but it still wasn't impressive. Here against Southeastern on this past Saturday, 10-20, so we're still talking slightly under 50% on the completion ratio. Had some drops in that first game, But and we don't have the running backs that we've had the last few years. I mean, we had Darius Geis. Before that, we had Leonard Fournette. Before that, we had Jeremy Hill. I mean, we had some dominant pro backs in that backfield. And although Nick is had a, you know, he's a senior, was a four-star recruit, finally getting his chance. Nick Brissett, and he's finally getting his chance, and he's got over 100 yards in both games. But, you know, I'm still not sold on he's that back that we've had here in the last few years. And so, and even though LSU is loaded at wide receiver with a bunch of young talent.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. But, you know, I'm still not sold on Burrows just yet. And so I have to see it. I just, you know, as much as I want LSU to win this game, I have to say that I would have to pick Auburn. I mean, they have more experience at the quarterback position than Jarrett Stidham. And they're also good on defense as well. So they're just as good defensively as LSU. So I think that will have to be, that, in my opinion, will be the difference in the game. And I think Auburn will win this game like 24-17.
JQ, I was going to say that LSU is, that's the Falcons' farm team, man. So we got to. I like to hear about LSU, man, and everything they have, man. So I'm excited. So that's me and Rob Scherer that, you know, love LSU, man. That's the Falcons farm team, man. So, yeah, keep it going, man. A lot of love, man.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I'm definitely clearly now I'm going to be wilding this week because I generally don't do this. But I'm going to probably go with the road teams in all of these. That Auburn-Washington game, Washington played them really tough. And I feel like Washington lost that game when Auburn won it. I mean, I think Stidham is a good quarterback, but I think LSU is going to be able to fly around on defense and make some plays happen. I hear you on Burrows, but, you know, I'm all in on Joe Burrows, and I know I'm a homer for it, but I'm going to ride with it. I picked LSU to crash the party, and this is a victory they got to have to make me look good. So I'm going with LSU in the upset.
What?
I hope you're right. I really do.
I know you do.
Number 17, Boise State. Number 24, Oklahoma State. We already know that JQ is going Boise State. Are you all road teams, JQ? All of them?
I'm taking all of them because, of course, I'm taking the third one, for sure.
Of course, yeah. We got you on that one. Wow. Rob, Boise State.
I think this is going to be a really good football game. I think this is going to be a very entertaining game. Brett Rypien, the quarterback at Boise State. He's really improved on his deep ball accuracy as well. And Oklahoma State's going to run that up-tempo offense. So I think it's going to be a really exciting football game. But I'm going to say Oklahoma State by a field goal. I'm going to go 41-38, Oklahoma State at home by 3 in an exciting game.
Come on, man. Rippin. That's Mark Rippin's nephew. I'm going with Boise State in that offense. I think that they're just going to find a way. Boise State is always tough when you play them, and I'm just not impressed with Oklahoma State. And I think this is the year Boise State is going to go into Stillwater and win. This is the year you may need to do it. I'm going to go with Boise State in that offense.
Nice.
Because you know that you know Oklahoma State ain't going to play no defense.
All right. Hey, I wonder if JQ is going to go with Ohio State at TCU.
Well, he already told you.
Honestly,
you have
any
conversations?
In all honesty, I think Ohio State has a better team. They're playing in Dallas versus TCU, and TCU has put a lot of points up these past couple of weeks against SMU, and I think this other team they played. They're going to be fast, and they're going to play decent defense, especially with that. I think it's a 3-3-5 that they play down there at TCU in Fort Worth. So it's going to be a challenge. Haskins looks like he's that dude, though. We're going to find out about him. We're also going to find out about Ryan Day. Because, you know, this is his stiffest test, and he talked about in the beginning they should walk the first two games, which they did. But now he's going to have to coach this game because they're going to have to survive that early storm and that punch from that crowd that's going to be mostly pro TCU, even though Ohio State travels pretty well. I still feel like they find a way. I think it's a closer game they've been playing, that both of them have been playing. We're going to find out who's able to rise to the occasion against a better quality opponent now that you play two teams that you know you're supposed to beat. I think it's a closer game. I think Ohio State wins by 7, but I think Ohio State still wins.
Yeah, I like Ohio State in this game, too, on the road. I'm going to go more of a 10-point victory for Ohio State. I'm going to say 34-24 in this ball game. And Sean Robinson, the quarterback of TCU, obviously four-star recruit out of Louisiana, played better this past week. Still not sold on him actually yet either. And but I think Ohio State, Dwayne Haskins, that backfield that they have and the defense will be too much for TCU. And like I said, Sean Robinson, the quarterback, he is showing some improvement, but still not sold on. Don't think he can beat an Ohio State team. I think Ohio State wins on the road.
I worry about a secondary. That's my only issue. I worry about a secondary.
Yeah, you'd be good. Like I said, I know they're gonna try to bring the high powered attack on, but like you said, I think your guys war of attrition, you pull that out easily. All right, that's it for our college football, gentlemen. We got about 19 minutes here in the show. We're having a good time in our live portion, and let's talk about the NFL, man. So yeah, week one has passed. We're gonna talk about some interesting storylines, and one storyline that's front and center, and is the Chicago Bears versus the Green Bay Packers, kind of the classic rivalry, if you will, one of the classic rivalries here. And I was sitting back watching this game, gentlemen, and I was thinking about Mike, and I was like, that's what an elite quarterback looks like, man. That's what I was thinking in my head, man. Just it was just amazing, man. And then Khalil Mack, man, came out like gangbusters, and I think he just ran out of gas.
Man, listen.
But, yeah, that's crazy.
Raiders got to be slapping themselves.
100%.
I mean, John Gruden.
100%.
Right, and we talked about it. What you doing? What's funny, you mentioned that. I was with Mike watching that game.
Mm.
And I got over there, and, you know, he and his wife are Packers fans, and, of course, he brainwashed all of his children, but they were asleep. And, I mean, he was just – I mean, he was just losing his mind. You know, he has. Absolutely.
Was
he, just brainwashed him.
For the beginning of the game, he was freaking, like, pacing, I bet, right, whenever he went down,
man,
right?
So I got over there, I think, in the second quarter. When I got to his house, I missed Aaron Rodgers getting hurt. So he told me about it, and I told you earlier, I've got Aaron Rodgers on one of my teams. I was like, come on, man, are you serious? And he was losing his mind. He definitely lost his mind when Khalil Mack kicked off that screen pass and took it to the house. Because he said right before that play, don't do anything stupid. Just run a draw and go down only 10-0. And then that play happened. And, of course, after he called it and then it happened, he lost his mind. But then the whole flip side of getting Aaron Rodgers back in the second half, and just unbelievable. That throw to Geronimo Allison in the back corner of the end zone.
Yes.
It's
unbelievable.
That's just talent. You can't teach that.
Elite quarterback.
Elite quarterback. Mm-hmm. That throw right there tells you how special Aaron Rodgers is. And he elevated the play of his whole team, not only on offense, but also on defense, because they were making Chicago look like the second coming, you know, with that offense, what they were doing to them in Green Bay on their first game of their 100th season. So, like, you got so much emotion right now. I've been to Lambeau. And, you know, the Chicago fans are going to go up there, and they probably were talking so much trash, you know, to the Green Bay fans, and he was saying it. And then in the second half, to watch that, you know, just wave come through, I mean, it was crazy. That was ridiculous. It was crazy to watch with a full-blown Packers fan as well, to see that whole gamut of despair to elation from, you know, the second quarter to the fourth quarter.
Mm. And I was going to say, too, just kind of back up that, too. It's crazy because – Once they had like 2 minutes left, and once they kicked it to, you know, they got it stopped, the game was over. I knew the game was over. I was like, Aaron Rodgers is going to take that team down and score. I just knew it. And you just felt it. It's like Tom Brady, right? You just know that this guy is going to do that, man, just kind of showing that. And that's what an elite quarterback will do. JQ, we always give you a hard time, but you always say the quarterback is the key. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. If you got in the quarterback, that's going to like literally take you to the promised land too. So, Rob, your thoughts on that, bro. Go ahead.
Yeah, obviously totally impressed with Aaron Rodgers. It sucks he brought him back on one leg. And I know he's questionable this coming week against the Vikings. I still can't see him not playing. And but a phenomenal performance. I mean, there are a lot of ways you can look at that and say that the Bears really should have won that game. But yeah, Aaron Rodgers just put that team on his back and carried him to victory at home. Phenomenal performance. And you know, to be totally honest with you, this is the Aaron Rodgers that we were used to seeing about 3-4 years ago, because technically last couple of years, in my opinion, he hadn't been the Aaron Rodgers of old. But, you know, we saw, you know, what his talent level is and what he can still do at the quarterback position. So it makes the Packers a scary team.
100%. So, do you like they had some predictions as far as the NFL, and some people have picked the Packers, and you know, like I said, at this juncture, I know it's really early. It's been one game, and I know we're going to talk about a lot of impressions as far as first weeks and little things like that, man. But like I said, again, if he keeps playing like that, I mean, that team is going to be really tough to beat, because you look at their receivers, like, who do they really have? I mean, obviously they got Randall Cobb and Devontae Adams, but it's not anyone that's crazy. He didn't really use Jimmy Graham either.
Jimmy Graham.
Crazy. So,
yeah
but he didn't really use him. And you're like, wow. So just wait till they get started. So it's scary, man. So we'll talk about that. And we'll kind of – I'm going to piggyback on that because, again, I was watching – I was a little kind of jealous, man, because I know the Falcons. We're talking about the Panthers and Falcons. And too bad Alex is not calling in because we were talking junk. And just – I know it's going to be hard for Rob to do this because I know he's a Falcons hater. But we were talking about the offense.
What a
passion. Because, again, that's okay. Whenever we were watching the game, and the same thing happened last year, seemed like it happened with this game versus the Eagles. And so we're talking about blaming, Steve Sarkisian, which is the number one scapegoat right now, number one hitman. And I was saying that, I think that Matt Ryan's got to step up too. If you're paying him $150 million, he's got to also be part of the problem to say, hey, let's not run this play like four times in a row or whatever. To which Alex disagreed with me. He's like, well, you got the offensive coordinator, yada, yada. And I'm like, well, still, you can't tell me that Matt can't talk to the guy and say, hey, we got to make some adjustments or whatever. That's what I was going to say. I mean, do you guys agree with me as far as if you're getting that much, you should be able to at least say, let's run a different play or let's talk about this. It's called auto. Something's got to happen. You can't run the same exact play four straight times in a row, right? I mean, besides blaming the offensive coordinator, there's got to be something with that, right? Am I crazy or no?
But you got to give Philadelphia's defense a lot of credit for what they were able to accomplish. But you also got to put a lot of blame on Atlanta coaching staff, too, on watching that game. I mean, that opening drive, you go right down the field and you get no points. Obviously hindsight is 20/20, but you get 3 points instead of going for it on fourth down right there. That last drive of the game, all you have to do is kick a field goal and send it overtime.
Kick a field goal, yep. Oh,
and so, I mean, you have to get those points. And then the play call that they called on the fourth down, or calling a sweep against that Eagles defense on the goal line, I mean, you got to put a lot of blame, in my opinion, on that coaching staff as well for that game, the way that game played out and the way it was called.
You're missing one point. They took Julio off for two or three of the plays on the goal line. Like, how do you take Julio off the field for two of the plays? Like,
he wasn't even on a play for
that
fourth down play.
Yep.
He went on that third down play. I don't understand how you take your best playmaker off the field. You have to at least make them honor him and double teaming. And now you have a schematic advantage because they have two guys on one guy in that short field. I just don't get that.
Yeah. In my personal opinion, that game was solely on the coaching staff for the Atlanta Falcons, even more so than Matt Ryan, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, he didn't have a big game either for certain things, but yeah, sorry, I'm still like a little upset because he sat there and said worked on the.
I don't get me wrong, I'm glad they lost, but being analytical, you got to put it on the coaching staff of Atlanta.
There's some plays that weren't made by Matt as well, but like I said, it was just one of those situations where just a couple things. So that's why going into the predictions, Panthers and Falcons. I don't really know what this team is going to do. They're schizophrenic. I don't know. I can't even pick this game. I'm hoping that we can pull it out. We lost Keanu Neal for the season. We lost Deion Jones for about 8 weeks here, man. So Deion Jones is out. So I don't know what to expect, man. I really watch him kind of score go nuts, but it's all good. Go ahead.
I think Atlanta wins this game at home. I do think they'll bounce back and win this game at home. I know you lost two key defenders, might be your two best defensive players on that team. And I know that's going to hurt. The good thing is Carolina's offense is not going to, it's not fantastic. So I think Atlanta offensively will get the job done in this game and pull this one out at home.
And Carolina's lost Greg Olsen, who was Cam's security blanket. So that's a big loss for Carolina that can't be understated. Yeah, we don't know the status of Luke Kuechly, who also got hurt in that game against Dallas. And there was nothing about that Carolina offense. Okay, if he plays, though, what percentage is he playing at? And Luke Kuechly has been getting dinged a lot the past couple of years. I don't know if he might not make another year or two in the league. And I love Luke Kuechly from Cincinnati. I think the injuries have caught up to him the way he plays. I agree with Rob. I think Atlanta finds a way to win. They can't start 0-2. they can't start on to. They have to have a level of desperation about them to propel them at home. And again, they're playing against a mediocre offense. So if not now, when? And then you talk about losing Shaquille O'Neal.
We got a mediocre offense too. Yeah, go ahead.
That's only you only have a mediocre offense by the limitation of your play caller. If they were ever, like you said, let Matt audible when he needs to, and also cause a better play, that offense can be dynamic. I hope they ain't dynamic in week 4 against my Bengals, but they have the pieces to be dynamic. So the talent is there. It's one thing to have a great play caller, but if he has, you know, sorry for the shit for players, then you can't really do anything about that. But you can reverse your play calling if you have the personnel to execute it. And Atlanta has that. So I think Atlanta finds a way to win an ugly game, but they find a way to pull out in the end.
Good call. Hey, so let's talk about the next game here. This is going to be a sore subject for Rob here, but Rob, Eagles at the Bucks, man. Now, I got to admit, I did not see the Bucks pulling off the win versus your Saints. A lot of guys lost in suicide pools, for sure, not to rub it in, Rob. But it was just like crazy. Ryan Fitzpatrick, and we'll talk about the play of Ryan Fitzpatrick because, I mean, Saints had a pretty good defense and felt like they kind of underestimated the Bucks. And I don't think it's going to happen again. But what say you about the Eagles? I mean, they're still not going to play Wentz. And, you know, obviously I got to check about Alshon Jeffries. But, Rob, in your opinion, what do you think about this particular game?
I was impressed with the Bucks offensively, I have to really admit. When you look at their wide receivers and their tight ends, they could be scary offensively. And I'll be honest with you, James Winston may not get that job back.
That's what I'm about to say. Yeah.
I don't know
if he's going to get that job back. Well, I mean, obviously we have to see if Fitzpatrick can continue to do this. But I was, you know, really impressed with what the Buccaneers did on the offensive side of the football. And I actually liked them to win this game over the Eagles, too.
No. I'm going to take the Eagles. As somebody that has watched Ryan Fitzpatrick play for his team, because he played for the Bengals, Ryan Fitzpatrick is the ultimate. He's the ultimate tease. He has games like this, and he'll put one or two of them together in a row. With that third or fourth game, he goes back and says, "Oh, okay, that's why Ryan Fitzpatrick is the backup."
This going to be number 2 right here.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm just saying, I've seen this show before where he comes out and he's like, "Man, Ryan Fitzpatrick, why is he not getting more of a chance?" And as you get deeper into it, you know, and teams adjust to him, and it doesn't go that same way for the course of the season. He's at best an 8-8 quarterback. I think that getting that win against New Orleans was a plus for Tampa, because they really thought they were going to start 0-3, because I believe they played somebody else tough again after Philadelphia. It's like Jacksonville or something crazy. Like, they played a tough opening 3 set, and they were really staring down the barrel of being 0-3. So now, not that 1-2 is a great place to be, but it's better than being 0-3. So I really think, you know, unless he does it for 3 games, and I'll eat crow if he does it, but I just don't see that happening. I'm going to take Philadelphia.
We'll keep an eye on that, Rob.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that offensively they look like they have something. They got a lot of weapons with their tight ends and wide receivers. And I'm going to say they can put up 27 points against the Eagles and win this game 27-21.
I like the Bucks, too, man. They won't
put up 48.
Yeah.
Deshaun Jackson's iffy though, his shoulder and the concussion protocol.
Okay, good call. All right.
Mike Evans, man, he ate Marshawn Lattimore for lunch this past week.
Yeah, that hurts my feelings.
Let's talk about, so another impressive squad was both the Ravens and the Bengals, if you will. I got to get your opinion on John Ross, too, JQ. But, yeah, what's going to happen in this particular game, JQ?
I'm not sold on John Ross. I told you guys I wasn't. I was not pleased when they took him that high in the draft. What scared me about Cincinnati is the fact that they were unable to, you know, until the second half, to really move the ball consistently against a bad Indianapolis defense. Now you're talking about playing a really good Baltimore defense. And I know they lost Kenneth Dixon on the offensive side, but they still are going to give Andy Dalton fits. I got to go with Baltimore. I want Cincinnati to win. But if we're going to look at – if I'm going to talk about, you know, history, the Bengals are 3-1,000 in primetime games. And in good consciousness, I can't pick the Bengals to win in the Marvin Lewis, Andy Dalton era in the primetime game. On a short week against a good defense, forget about it. I can't. You know, like I said, that's my heart wants them to win. But to get on a show and say, I'm picking the Bengals, who are notoriously horrific in primetime, Thursday, Sunday night, Monday night, any 4 o'clock or 8 o'clock games. They just don't play well. And I don't, you know, they got all the same pieces in play. So what makes me think it's going to change? I'm going to take Baltimore.
Give me some hope.
Well,
man,
you picked LSU. I picked against LSU. I'm going to pick the Bengals in this game. And it's tough for the road teams to win on the road on these Thursday night games. It really is. On a short week, they have travel on Wednesday to get to the destination. You've seen, I mean, there's been rare cases. I mean, obviously there have been some road teams, but I know it's probably about 80% or so that the home team wins on these Thursday night games, because it's just tough to pull this off on a short week and have to travel at the same time. And I think, obviously the Ravens, man, they opened up a can against the Bills. But I think offensively, I think the Bengals might have something. And so I think they'll be able to challenge Baltimore a lot more than with Buffalo. What, Nathan Peterson, what was he, 2 out of 15 with a couple
Nathan
of INTs?
Yeah.
Yeah, he sucks. And Dalton sucks too.
Yeah, Dalton, but he's better than Nate Peterman.
I'll give you that.
He's better than – he's going to at least challenge that Ravens team. And this Ravens team is beat up in the secondary. I mean, the Buffalo just didn't have anything to beat that secondary. I think the Bengals win this game. I really do. I'm going to say 24-17 Bengals at home.
I hope you're right.
There you go. Hey, all right, so we got about 3 minutes here. I really want to – focus on a couple of games here, because I know we got to talk about 2 more games. If you can get it in, I'm going to let JQ start it off, because this is going to be an interesting game, because the Vikings made Jimmy Garoppolo bring him out early, game look silly. Now you're going against a very good Aaron Rodgers led team that's got a lot of confidence too, man. So literally, if you can get it in 30 seconds, and let Rob wrap up the OT, go from that, JQ.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is not 100%. You can do that against the upstart Chicago team. I don't think you can necessarily do that against the Minnesota team. So as much as I think Green Bay can win this game, with a banged up Aaron Rodgers, I'm going to take Minnesota and squeak him.
I agree. I like Minnesota on the road in Lambeau Field in this game to beat Green Bay. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers got the sprained knee. We don't know how healthy he's going to be, but like you said, Minnesota is a lot tougher opponent than the Bears, even though the Bears will probably improve. I like Minnesota on the road in this one, and I'm going to go 27-17.
Mike is not happy. Rob, wrap up the OT portion here, sir.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for continuing to tune into us each and every week. We appreciate you tuning into our live portion. We're getting ready to go into our OT portion, and all we have is NFL talk left. All football on tonight, so we got some more topics we're going to cover here in our OT portion. So click on the same link, and you'll get the rest of our show. You can listen to it on tomorrow. We got a lot of NFL talk. NFL fans from all over the country should be listening to our OT portion, because we're talking about the Jets, we're talking about the Broncos, we're talking about the Patriots, we're talking about the Texans, in every corner of the country. So if you're a football fan, you should be tuning into our OT portion here over the next couple of days. Next week, we're going to be back on the air live on Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Time. You don't want to miss it. We're making football great again, people. Good night.
Yes, sir. Shout out to my homeboy, Mike. He texted me and said he's going to try to drop by the show here soon. Appreciate everybody. Talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. You want to get any credits in there, Rob? You got to get any credits in there, Rob?
Frozen tundra of Lambeau Field.
This was like 2 minutes and 15 seconds. I was able to grab this off of YouTube, man. I'm hoping we get in trouble with that, man, because I'm just like, man, it's such a great theme. Any fantasy you want to throw in there, Rob, or no? You have the notes in there or no?
Fantasy results from this past week. Let me grab my notes here.
Sorry, JQ.
No, you're fine. You're good.
Fantasy results. Sorry, caught me off guard a little bit. I wasn't ready.
I was going to be ready.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to have time for it now.
You got 20 seconds.
It might be our fantasy results. Might be an OT portion.
Yeah, that's cool. All right,
here we go. Real quick here. League number one, Monsters of the Midway, had the biggest win. That's Paul in Atlanta, 187.74. to 159.86 over Girlies with the Chumps. Eagles chick for life. She's in first place out of Albuquerque.
Uh-oh.
League number two, biggest win of the week. That's nice. Fleur de Lis, that's Matthew from Indianapolis, with a 168.72 to 97.76 win over Kid Cav 23. Pellies, that's Aaron in Hartford, Connecticut, in first place. And let's see, league number, I'm missing a league here. Some kind of way, something got deleted here. Well, league number four. Joe from Houston, Birds flew south with a 195.42 victory over Baby Got Backfield.
Uh-oh.
And Andre, I'm sorry, Birds flew south is also in first place. So somehow I don't have the league number three fantasy results here. I don't know what happened there. Sorry about that.
Unacceptable.
Don't matter, I lost.
Unacceptable. All right, we made some progress here. That was pretty good. I didn't mean to catch you off guard, man. But as a Tom Clawson said, you always gotta be prepared, Rob. Just make sure that you always be on your P's and Q's. That's what we like to do, man. Hey, let's keep this going here. We were talking about the last part of the game here, and we'll the last matchup here we want to focus on is the Patriots at the Jaguars. Leonard Fournette is actually is dursting the hamstring. You're not sure if he's going to play. Again, this is an interesting situation. It's at the Jaguars, so you know that they're going to be pretty amped. Will Blake Bortles have the handcuffs taken off, JQ, or what's going to happen here in this particular matchup?
Nope. You're going to run the ball with T.J. Yeldon, and you're going to play good defense. You're going to try to get out of there, which I think they will do. With the victory, that Jacksonville defense is for real. And if you don't know, America watching it, hopefully you get a chance to see him again. That's not a fluke that happened last year. You know, I know New England's probably happy to get them early in the year when they're still reasonably healthy. They would like to have Julian Edelman for this matchup. They done Chris Hogan. This was absolutely atrocious. But Gronk was Gronk. And what they did is what I thought they would do is deploy those backs out of the backfield as wide receivers. But you got Burkhead, I think, is also now in concussion protocol, if I don't believe if I'm wrong. I know he's hurt. It's questionable, which is a big deal for that New England offense. So him being knocked down, Hogan being ineffective, and I just don't think they go into Jacksonville and get a win. I think Jacksonville makes a statement to the AFC that they are a real contender.
Oh, Rob,
I'm going to go with Jacksonville at home with their defense, with or without Leonard Fournette. I'm going to go with Jacksonville to win this game at home. I think they're going to be motivated, especially with the way they lost in the AFC Championship game. I think they are for real. I think this game sets up perfectly for them. The Patriots don't have the weapons on the perimeter that would scare anybody. Obviously, you still got to deal with Gronkowski and Brady. But I think the Patriots, and the offensive line-wise, they can be had. And I think the Jaguars' pass rush are going to give them fits as well in that area. And obviously, the Patriots probably going to try to go with a lot of screens and keep them honest and things of that nature and run the football. But I like the Jaguars on the road to win this game 23-16. I mean, at home, winning 23-16.
I agree.
You hear that, Tom Brady? You hear that, Tom Brady? You're going to get yours, bro. You're going to get it, man. Jaguars.
You double Gronk.
Those linebackers
are fierce.
The Jaguars' defense is great on every level. Every level.
They are. You put a safety You put a safety over the top of the linebacker with Gronk, and you go man everywhere, especially on Jalen Ramsey's side, and you can rush the pass out. I think they're going to give New England a whole lot to fix. I agree.
Yep, good call. All right, let's talk about this. We got about freaking eight more topics to discuss here. The Cowboys, their week one performance. And I got to say, I think we pretty much all predicted that the Cowboys were going to struggle. To the way they struggled was pretty monumental here, if you will. So, again, what's wrong with the Cowgirls, Rob?
Well, the same things we said all summer and all offseason. Obviously, they don't have the weapons on the perimeter. It's going to cause them some trouble. And also the offensive line, obviously, with some of the injuries that have been deteriorated a little bit. And it's really hurting them. So you can really key in on Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott. So, obviously, same thing. We thought defensively they would be really good. But we thought they would struggle offensively. And that's exactly what we saw in this game against Carolina. It's pretty much what we say it all off season. it's pretty much came to fruition. I still think they're gonna be solid defensively, can keep them in a lot of games, but they're gonna struggle offensively.
Yeah, I really don't have. Pretty much. I mean, I give Rob a lot of credit. He's been beating that drum since, you know, early in the training camp, and when the Blues started flying, that's exactly what happened. You know, they just did not have enough weapons to threaten Carolina. I mean, they scored 8 freaking points. I mean, just think about that. They scored 8 points. I mean, that is offensive futility at its finest. I mean, your defense only gave up 16, so you're supposed to win that game. Your defense only gives up 16 points. So, I mean, not much to add to that. The Cowboys might be in for a long season.
Yep, I agree.
All right, so we're talking about one challenging performance to another interesting performance, and that Patrick Mahomes, man. You talk about a nice coming-out party. Again, it's week
impressive.
One. I don't know if you're going to get excited or you're like, hey, you know, let's kind of like pump the brakes. Let's see what's happening. But what do you think about Patrick Mahomes, Rob?
I was impressed. And I will say, I mean, the first couple of preseason games, his accuracy was all over the place. He was kind of erratic. And then you saw by the third preseason game, he looked a lot better. He was like 18 to 24, still missed on some deep throws. But I was really impressed with what you saw in week one against the Chargers. And, man, you see the way that ball just come out of his hands.
Chargers.
That guy's got a rocket. And, I mean, he's got a strong arm. The ball just comes out of his hands so smooth. And it looked like he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I think I'm sold now on Patrick Mahomes. I know it's early. I know it's week one. 256 yards passing and 4 touchdowns without an interception in his first game as a starting quarterback. I mean, I thought he did a phenomenal job against a team that I thought would be the favorite in the AFC West. He and Tariq Hill, I mean, they really both put on the show on Sunday in that ball game. And Chiefs might be the team. JQ kind of hinted at that too, even though we both picked the Chargers, but we figured the Chiefs weren't that far behind. And Mahomes, man, he looks like he could be the real deal.
Hold on, JQ.
Yeah.
Do that. Hold on, real quick. So I was going to say, just really quickly, because we talked about a couple things with Patrick Mahomes and what he's doing. It's kind of scary that he kind of does kind of have a Brett Favre-ish like kind of, you know, gunslinger mentality. So it's ironic that you got Andy Reid, you know, interesting here. But go ahead, finish that thought. Go ahead, JQ. I just want to say that.
Yeah, you talked about Patrick Mahomes, and he was awesome. But when I watched that game and the highlights of the things I missed, to me it was Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill put that team on his back and just went plumb bonkers. If you played against Tyreek Hill and Alvin Kamara, you had a whole lot of problems this week in fantasy football. Tyreek Hill was a dude. In that game.
I have Tariq Hill on one team and had him on a bench. So,
oh my God.
Bro,
yeah,
I had Deshaun Jackson on the bench versus your Saints, man. So that hurt me, but on the conversation. Yeah, go ahead.
So, I mean, yeah, he looked the part, don't get me wrong. And I think he's going to have games where he's going to look like that, but I think we're going to have some conversations over the course of this year where he looks like bad Brent Favre. And you're going to get that out of a young player who has that kind of arm and that kind of faith in his arm. He knows he has that arm. He's going to make some throws that he is not supposed to make. And they may work out because his receiver might bail him out, but he may not work out because he's throwing the triple coverage. And I think that's just who Mahomes is going to be. And as he gets older, I think he's going to hopefully figure that out. But he still definitely has that far of anybody. Like you said, that ball is electric, is the word that I would use, coming out of his arm.
He's got tremendous arm talent.
Yes, he
might have the best arm talent in the league right now. Unbelievable the way the ball comes out of his hand.
Easy. I would put him still behind Aaron Rodgers. But he's got that kind of talent to where he can make an off balance throw, fly into his right, and just put so much zip on you. Like, how did you make that throw? So I give him credit, and you know he's got an offensive guru and Andy Reid. Andy Reid may not be able to manage the clock, but he knows how to run an offense, and that was on display in that game. So I give Mahomes and Andy Reid a lot of credit, and Tyreek Hill for sure was just a man against the Chargers.
I think Patrick Mahomes was also drafted in baseball. He was a pitcher or something like that too, man. So that's something I want to verify that too, man. I know he played baseball as well too, man. So he's got that dynamic arm. In that interest too. And I got to say, just as a little quick side note, I guarantee I don't think anyone had Ryan Fitzpatrick as a starting quarterback, by the way. So all the points went for naught, man. Because that craziness. All right, gentlemen, this is going to tickle Rob. as far as Adrian Peterson. We thought he was washed up, man, but what the French toast, man. What's up with Adrian Peterson? Still around, Rob?
Yeah, had a solid game this past week. Obviously, rushed for his 100 career touchdown. Had 26 carries, 96 yards, and a touchdown for the game. Now that ties in with Marshall Faulk and Sean Alexander for 7th all-time on a rushing TD list. So, obviously, tremendous. Peterson also had 70 receiving yards. And that was more of a surprise because you never saw him as being a big pass catcher out of the backfield, even in his prime years with the Vikings. And so, I mean, they have 96 yards rushing and 70 receiving yards, Washington 24-6 win over Arizona. That was impressive. And he actually looked pretty good running the football in that game, too. So, you know, maybe he's got a little juice left. We'll see.
Arizona.
But, you know, his first game last year with Arizona, he looked good, and then he kind of tailed off after that. So let's see if he can do it on a regular basis.
Exactly, and that was my point. One, you know, he's playing an awful Arizona team. Two, he has some revenge in mind having played for Arizona and being let go. So, you know, I think he has some extra juice because he brings that every week where you don't have that motivation of that team let me go kind of piece of it. And, I mean, Arizona just is a bad team. And, they, again, like you said, Arizona, Denny Green, they are who we thought they were, and they just are not a really good team. I hate that they've wasted Larry Fitzgerald for these past, you know, 5-7 years. And the fact that he's been so loyal not to want to leave, that he could have jumped ship and probably won him a ring by now, goes to his character and his loyalty to that Arizona organization. So I'll give Peterson, I'll give him credit. He did look like he had a little juice back in his legs, but I'm also with you, Rob. I need to see it over a greater sample size before I announce that he's back.
He's back! All right, let's talk about this. So we are going to talk about Carolina and their week one performance. And you know, kind of interesting out the gate here. Cam still hasn't quite got a grasp on the offense. And I don't know if that had to do with, you know, give some credit to the Cowboys, surprisingly. But what about their performance in week one, Rob?
Well, from a defensive standpoint, they were outstanding. But, you know, at the same time, Dallas doesn't have a great offense, too. So you still want to I think we'll see how good their defense is maybe against Atlanta this week. Dante Jackson, the rookie from LSU, was phenomenal in that game, and it looked like he can be a really good player. That's one of the areas that Carolina has been suffering the last couple of years is in the secondary. And, you know, JQ mentioned Luke Kuechly, you know. I even wonder if he's still the same linebacker as well. You know, so age starting to catch up with him a little bit. So I think we'll see if their defense is legit or not when they face Atlanta on the road this past week. And defensive line-wise, I think they're really good in that department, especially at defensive tackle position. They're still going to be tough to run the ball against. So I think they should be solid in that standpoint. Cam Newton ran the ball pretty well in that game as well offensively. Obviously, losing Greg Olsen is going to be a tough blow for him. They're going to have to rely on Devin Funchess and also the rookie wide receiver out of Maryland. And so they're going to have to rely on those guys from an offensive standpoint. But like I said, it's you know, they went against a team that really doesn't have much offensively. So I think we'll see if they're legit or not this coming week. But I don't see them beating Atlanta on the road. I really don't.
Yeah, my thing is just meh. You know, I mean, you scored 16 points. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it wasn't a phenomenal performance by Carolina. They did enough to win, and maybe in 8 weeks if they get it going, you know, you look back and it's just a W on the schedule. But, you know, being so close to that performance right now this Wednesday, I just am not over the moon about Carolina's chances in that division. Even though Atlanta and New Orleans both lost as well, I still feel like in the long term those two teams would be better than Carolina. And Carolina also lost the offensive lineman, I believe, to a knee injury in that game as well, which will impact their ability to run and control the clock like they want to exactly. So it's just a, you know, it's a C. They did enough to win, but they didn't overwhelm me. And I don't, you know, we'll see against Atlanta. I didn't see enough in that Dallas game where I feel like they're coming to Atlanta and win.
Gotcha. All right. So, again, I was wishing that Alex Cullen, he's a huge Bronco fan. That's my barber. And so Denver, week one, and, you know, eventually we were talking about all Denver needed was a quarterback. And I'm not to say we were 100% sold on Case Keenum, but Case went in there, made some really good plays, guys. And again, that offense looks pretty pretty dead. Not that they have to be like they're like top, you know, five or anything like that. But again, did what needed to be done. That defense, I mean, Denver, again, they look like 20 times better than, you know, obviously with Trevor Siemian and or Paxton Lynch, man. So what are your thoughts about that, JQ, and Denver, their week one performance?
You know, I feel like it's the same story again. I mean, they played a Seattle team that clearly has been hurt by a loss of talent. I mean, Earl Thomas hasn't played in forever. You lose Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman is gone. I mean, you know, KJ Wright didn't play. I mean, they've gotten older on defense, and they just aren't as that. It's not that Seattle defense where you're like, oh, that Seattle defense. Like, you don't even want to start your offensive players against them because they're going to get shut down. Like, I don't have that feeling for Seattle. So when I see Denver do that, I'm like, okay, I need to see more of a bigger sample size. They took care of business. To me, it was more about the Denver defense than it was the Denver offense. I mean, Seattle made some plays, but they also have a dynamic quarterback in Russell Wilson who's able to mask some of those flaws that Seattle has and can keep them in games. But I need to see Denver do it against a more complete team than Seattle. So, again, it's more of a meh for me for Denver. The defense was good. I'm still not sold on Case Keenum there quite yet. It takes a little time to develop that chemistry. You just can't throw them into it and think it's going to happen. But, I mean, you know, they could have you know, crapped the bed, so to speak, and they found the way to win, so you got to give them credit. But to me, it was more about the Denver defense than anything else.
Crap the bed. I love it. Go ahead, Rob.
All I'm going to say about that game, Von Miller.
Yep.
Von Miller was phenomenal in that game. 3 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and a fumble recovery. And as JQ mentioned, the defense of Denver, but Von Miller was the catalyst for that defense. He was outstanding, put pressure on the quarterback the entire game. He forced Russell Wilson to move around a lot, and like I said, he sacked him 3 times. Phenomenal performance. He's obviously still an elite pass rusher, an elite defensive player in this league. And that's, if you're Denver, you're going to have to bank on that. And Bradley Chubb, you know, to have that dynamic pass rush. To keep you in games. And that was the performance. I mean, Von Miller was outstanding. He's got to be probably defensive player of the week in the NFL.
Yep.
Again,
maybe just in case you forgot.
Don't forget about Khalil Mack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Khalil was on the
team. Oh, yeah, Khalil Mack was outstanding, too. But his team lost, though. Von Miller's team won.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they also played Aaron Rodgers, so.
I think it's interesting, too, because, you know, just in case you forgot about Von Miller and that defense, he definitely made you remind, hey, I'm still here. So something to be definitely to be reckoned with. Big Ben, the Steelers were – and I'm always interested to see what JQ's talking about, how he hates Pittsburgh. But the Steelers, you know, Big Ben did his thing. But for what we were talking about as far as the Browns are extremely talented. Shout out to your boy Denzel Ward, JQ. Just, man,
yep.
2 interceptions, just proving why he was a top pick. And for all the crap that we give Cleveland, they have an extremely talented team. And in spite of the tie, I almost call that a win by the Browns because, wow. I know the Steelers. They should have got blown out.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
I know Le'Veon Bell with all the crap that happened, Le'Veon Bell, James Conner did his thing. But for them to sit there and hold serve, I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, wow. You know, it's like they got some. Not saying they're all world or anything like that, but I'm saying, all right, they're not going to be a pushover like we're thinking. They have some talent on that squad, man. So that's all I'm saying.
Listen. Okay, so there's twofold. The Big Ben's performance was the key. Was the question? They were playing in a monsoon, so I'm going to take that. I'm going to throw that out. That's the great equalizer for Cleveland. Is to bring them in there and have that happen and have the weather level the playing field. So, you know, again, you know, he wasn't great. He had 4 interceptions in that game. Denzel Ward had 2 of them. He's got to do better than that. But James Conner he definitely picked up the slack for Le'Veon Bell. I mean, he had a really good game. He had a bad fumble that kind of kept Cleveland in it. But, no, if you're Cleveland and you force 6 turnovers at home, I don't care if you're playing in a blizzard. If you force 6 turnovers at home, you have to win that game.
Yep.
So I'm not going to give them a W for that. If you force 6 turnovers, you got to win that game. You got to. I'm sorry. You got to win that game. That's your best chance to get off the snide. The tie is still not a win. I know they didn't win a game last year, but still. If you force 6 turnovers, you got to win that game. Have to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm done.
Gotcha.
Yep. Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, threw for 335 yards, only completed 56.1% of his passes, threw for one touchdown, but obviously the turnovers really cost Pittsburgh from winning that game. They got a tie, but it really cost them. And, I mean, James Conner did enough, really, at the running back position, mm-hmm. so you can't blame it on not having Bell. And, yeah, that's a game to me that I think Pittsburgh will look back on and regret not pulling out victory in that game, settling with the tie.
It's not a loss, though. When you talk about playoff scenarios, the tie is not a bad thing to have.
It's not a loss.
It's not. When you talk about win percentage in terms of that, it's not a loss. So I hear you. If they're in a loss, you say, yeah. But a tie is middle ground because if you end up,
it's not a loss, though.
You know,
it's not a loss.
10-5 and if you end up 10-5-1, you still win a tiebreaker with somebody that was 10-6 because of percentage points. So,
but if somebody's 11-5, though, they're still better than 10-5-1 too.
I guess there's two sides to that. Yeah,
Mario.
That's true.
Mario, I tried, man. My cousin Mario, listening to us from Japan. I tried, bro. I got to tell you, man. He's a huge Cleveland fan, man. He's holding on, man. So,
Bills starting Josh Allen this Sunday. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, we knew that was happening. All right, gentlemen. We're still rocking along here. Hey, Rob, did Bill O'Brien cost the Texans the game against the Patriots?
Well, I don't know if he cost them the game, but I think he really should have threw the challenge flag out for that play. You know, you see the Patriots rushing to the line of scrimmage to get the ball, hiked in. Yeah, I mean, the Patriots wound up scoring a touchdown on that drive and winning 27-20. I think you got to give your team a chance. I think you throw the challenge flag out on that situation. And,
It was under two minutes. So he should have called timeout.
Yeah, he should have called timeout and then talked to the referees. Yeah, because they couldn't throw the challenge flag. Thanks for that correction.
Correct.
But, yeah, under 2 minutes, that's what I meant. He should have called a timeout there in that situation. And he didn't. So, I mean, you got to give your team every opportunity and chance to win. And so that was a failure on his part there. So, there's a chance he possibly cost his team that game. I mean, Houston was really competing. And I don't know if he would have won the game, but it really could have gave his team an opportunity to win.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure that we're saying the right thing. I agree. You got to give your team – you got three timeouts. You're under 2 minutes. You're not going to get a chance to use all three of them. Why not, like you said, give yourself a chance to win? Give them an extra 30 to 45 seconds to look at it again and take a look at that. And then also in the fourth quarter, I believe they were down 14 with, like, what, 4 or 5 minutes left, and he punted. And it's a Tom Brady, you can't do that. I mean, at that point, you got to be like, this is our last stand. And you still were able to only lose by 7. So, I'm going to say with those two things combined that he cost them the game, and we've been talking about it, that Bill Belichick coaching tree is a weed. It's not a tree. It's a weed that you need to prune and cut and put some Roundoff on. Like, it's bad. I don't know if Patricia get his doors blown off by Sam Darnold. I'm just saying, Patricia got destroyed by a rookie and Sam Darnold at home. They got destroyed in that game.
We're going to talk about that, too. But
except for Nick Saban. That's the only Bill Belichick disciple that's really doing well.
He's not telling everyone all his secrets, man. But even watching that game, you got to talk about just that they just flat out, I mean, the intercept. Well, I don't know what was wrong with Matt Stafford, man. That was just crazy. But I give Sam Darnold credit for having that first pick, throwing it for interception, putting it back for touchdown. That could have crushed most people.
He came back down.
And stuck with it.
Yes,
and
he did.
He kept playing, and that's a big time move, because most people they would have folded like a freaking they would have crumbled. He was like, I got this.
Cheap suit.
And then, but it's crazy because you don't know who the rookie was, right? The way that Matt Stafford was playing, you're like, who's the rookie here? Right? All the interceptions. There's some interesting plays, but it was just like, man. So that was crazy. Good.
I know it's early, but he definitely looked like he has the opportunity to be the best quarterback out of this draft. I mean, obviously, I still think Baker has a shot too. And we haven't seen him play just yet in the regular season game. But Darnold seems like he has the hit factor.
Yeah, surprisingly. I mean, we were kind of talking about he had a couple things. I know, certain teams made him look bad versus USC, but he has taken on the NFL and maybe better in the pros.
Yep.
Yeah, Ohio State.
Yeah,
it's
Ohio State.
Business. But, but yeah, so what do you want to add anything else to his value as well, Jake, to you?
No. I mean, that's a true statement. I mean, you hit it on the head. If you have that, for most people, they will go into the toilet, and you got to worry about next week and the rest of the regular season in terms of can you salvage their confidence and what can you get out of them. To respond like that, and I told you, we talked about it, that Jets defense gave Matthew Stafford fits, and we talked about that Jets defense being able to keep them in games, but we didn't know if they would have enough playmakers. I tell you what, Quincy Enunwa really showed up and showed up big as the security blanket and soaked up so many targets for Donald in that game, because I feel like Robert Anderson is just an idiot, to be honest with you, and he's too light in the ass. He was going to be pretty much just a kind of go down the field kind of receiver. I just believe that. And Enunwa is just a bigger, kind of bigger, thicker Pierre Garçon kind of wide receiver for Sam Darnold. I think you're going to see that connection just continue to blossom over the course of this season. So I give him a ton of credit for not going into the tank after throwing that interception and totally putting it on Detroit at home. Did you see the fan shots of those people in the stadium? Oh, my God. I mean, you already have, you know, the players ready to revolt against Patricia this week one.
Yeah, it was very little shell shock. That's what we talk about. Like, you know, there's certain performances you can't get too, like, one side or you know, it's that even kill, right? It's week one, right? You know, certain things like, wow. But then it's just week one. I mean, you can definitely turn it around. It's going to take a hell of a toll. You know, even Matt Stafford had to apologize. Hey, guys, I apologize. That was on me. So the good news is that you're going to be so low, they can turn it around. But, again, it's going to be rough right now. So he can get through that. Adversity is going to make you stronger, is what they say. Let's talk about really quickly, but I know the fans are upset. I had like a lot of Detroit fans. They just didn't.
The Lions didn't look great the preseason either, so you kind of saw this coming.
It's the precursor of the season, man. Should the Giants be discouraged, JQ?
No, I don't think they should be discouraged at all. They played a fantastic Jacksonville team. I believe it was, what, again, 20-15? Or something like that. I mean, they played them almost to a draw. I mean, I wouldn't be discouraged. You saw Saquon Barkley showing himself as the real deal. That run around right in and just taking it to the house. He showed you why they took him over Darnold. And even though Darnold looks really good, and it may end up that no team is a loser in that fact that if you had a
win-win.
Yeah.
100%.
You know, they both got really, really, really good players. So if I'm a Giants fan, I'm not necessarily discouraged. You played a flat-out, you know, top five at worst, you know, pick for winning the Super Bowl, and you lost by 5 points, against the consensus number one defense in the league right now. I wouldn't be discouraged. You just want to hope that, you know, when you play a lesser opponent, you're able to take more advantage of opportunities. Because you look at that, they had a chance to make a drive, but they muffed the punt, and that basically ended the game. So, I mean, if he doesn't do that, you have an opportunity to maybe pull the upset, because make no mistake about it, if they had to beat Jacksonville, that would have been an upset. So to lose by less than a touchdown to them, I wouldn't be discouraged. I mean, you don't really take any more victories because there's only 16 games and everyone counts so much. But, you know, if you lose 40-3, you're discouraged. Losing 20-15 is not discouraging.
That is true. That is true. 100% agree with that. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, and obviously part of that was Jacksonville had to get INT and return it for a touchdown here. That's 7 points right there that, you know, the Giants would love to have back and have an opportunity to win that game. So they were definitely right there in the mix. So by all means, they definitely should not be discouraged after that week one loss. I mean, they're still in the mix. And we still don't know what's going to come out of with this Eagles team just yet with some of the injuries and things of that nature that they had. They were phenomenal defensively in week one. The Giants may still have a chance to be competing in that division. We saw what Saquon Barkley can do as well. I know the question is seems to be asked every week, you know, would the Giants regret drafting Sam Darnold? And right now they just need to enjoy Saquon Barkley. And in hopes that they can get, you know, legitimate 6, 7, 8 years out of him from being an elite running back here. And Eli Manning obviously may only have a few years left. They'll just have to find another way to get a quarterback. But right now you got an opportunity to enjoy one of the elite talents in the game, Saquon Barkley.
Eli Manning has this year left. I don't see him having another year after that.
I agree with JQ. you draft your replacement in this coming up draft and call it, man. And then you already got a dynamic running back. We already mentioned it. I think it's a win-win for both sides. You can't keep playing the what-if game. You've already settled. You could have had the opportunity, like we talked about, to draft him. The Jets moved up. You got Barkley. You still figured you had one more year of Eli Manning. You still had Odell Beckham Jr. making his thing. So, and you got to pay your quarterback too. So now, kind of rest out. Let him go out, and then get your quarterback. Get prepared for the future. That's what you do for the Giants. And hopefully, that defense can be more solid.
What?
So that's your plan.
And you know what? If you know what I'm saying, you're absolutely right. And it touched on the point. You might end up in the same spot if you hit on the right quarterback that you saw Seattle do with Russell Wilson when they went to the Super Bowl and what you see the Rams doing with Goff still on that rookie quarterback deal where you can take that Eli Manning money and disperse it to other parts of your team to make it stronger because you're going to have to pay your rookie quarterback but an X amount of dollars because he's on that rookie scale. So that's an excellent point that they hit on that quarterback in this draft. You can free some of that money up and it just makes them so much stronger.
Uh-huh. Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. Last topic for the day. We got through it, gentlemen, with 15 minutes to spare here. And this is an interesting topic as far as I think, Rob, you're putting this one here to kind of like, again, trigger us. Should the Browns turn to Baker Mayfield right now? And I'm going to say no at this juncture because Tyrod played a really good game. I mean, in spite of what, you know, we said earlier, it's a monsoon. But, you know, right now, let kind of Tyrod do his thing, wrap it up, and then give Baker some time, maybe like a week, you know, maybe toward the end of the season, kind of ease into Baker. But the good news is that you don't have to force him in, that you don't have to start him like a Josh Allen for the Bills. But kind of let him, you know, kind of get into that role and grow into that. That's what I would say. What about you, JQ?
No, I agree. And you, Hugh, who has been, 1-15 and 0-16, and, you know, you said it. I mean, they're going to celebrate it over the Haiti Steelers when they get a loss. But if I'm the head coach and I've got Tyrod Taylor who minimizes his mistakes and he was able to pull a tie out, you know, they should have won it. But in the monsoon, I'm going to, again, I need a bigger sample size. When you have those crazy weather kind of games where it just totally, you know, eliminates your ability to evaluate your quarterback and what he really can do. In that kind of conditions, you got to give him a little bit of a longer leash. And you signed him to be that bridge quarterback, like Robert likes to talk about before when we talk about the Jets, what we thought they were going to do before they turned to Darnold. That once you have him in the building, I think until things just go totally south, you give him a chance. Now, if he comes out and he's awful in the next couple of weeks and, you know, in domes or in really good weather, then you reevaluate your position. You know, it's a fluid kind of thing. But right now, I would not turn to Baker. I would let Baker learn, hey, you saw how long Aaron Rodgers had to sit, and of course, Tyrod is not Brett Favre, so people don't kill me. I'm talking about in terms of the sitting and learning.
You said it,
absorbing.
Yo.
No, I didn't say no shit like that. You know, yeah, you know, to kind of get a feel for how the game is being managed at the NFL level and the speed of it, watching it, like, okay, this defense is doing this, that, and that. I think a piece that is still, you know, invaluable, even though you're not in the, you know, the heat of the battle of actually starting and playing the game. So I'm with you. I think you start Tyrod and you give him a little bit of release, especially when you've only won one game in 2 years. He's a vet at this point. You give him a chance. If he turns out that everybody sees he's not that, then you turn to Baker. But you didn't really have any aspirations of making the playoffs or winning anything this year. So you're just trying to get some wins under your belt to try to build your program up. And you do that and you let Baker run from the sideline until it's his time to actually go into the game.
You just hope that Hugh Jackson does have enough leash from the management. Like, they're not going to fire him as quickly. You hope that they're going to let him go through a couple of lumps because Hugh may have that, if you've been watching Hard Knocks, you may have that kind of, it's like, I got to win, you know. And so, again, that's why you may let Tyrod play a little longer. But, like I said, the good news, you don't have to rush Baker Mayfield. You got your quarterback from what you can tell. So give him the apple opportunity. The best case scenario, if he becomes an Aaron Rodgers, that is the ultimate best case scenario. Not saying that that's going to happen, but let him kind of like see all the flaws, get in there, and then whenever he's ready, you don't force him, you don't put him in there and ruin him like the Browns always seem to do, right? The Tim Couches of the world. I mean, you put the quarterback in, take his lumps, and then he's done. Let him kind of watch, as you said, I agree with you. Then whenever he's ready, you know, to adversity. And then you're going to make a better quarterback in the long run. Rob, what about you, bro? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's time to push the panic button just because you got a tie at home against the Steelers. I think you have to stay the course, stay with your plan for the time being. and see what Tyrod Taylor can do for you from a leadership perspective, and leading this team going forward. The cupboard is not bare on this Browns team. There's a lot of talent on that roster, and so you would hope that you start to see them starting to turn the corner here a little bit. Hopefully they don't turn the corner this week against my Saints, but hopefully after that, you start to see them starting to turn the corner a little bit. When you talk about their roster, I mean, they do have talent on every. Myles Garrett has the potential to be one of the top pass rushers in the game. And, so there's talent on this roster. There's no question about it. So I think you stay the course. You see what Tyrod Taylor can do for you. And I think you make that evaluation. I think you have to give Tyrod Taylor at least 4 weeks as a starter. Yeah, you have to evaluate that in a quarter of a season and see how they're looking as far as progressing and going forward.
That's a lock of the week. That game is in New Orleans, right? Cleveland and New Orleans?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, that's a lock of the week. There's no way they lose a Tampa Cleveland back-to-back weeks. They are getting ready to act. This is an all-start. If you got any Saints player, I don't care if he's a fourth wide receiver, you start that dude, they're going to go completely off on Cleveland.
I thought the Saints were locked against the Bucs in week one, too, so that didn't turn out to be that way. And as a matter of fact, I was in a survival league, and in one of them I picked the Saints, and the other one I picked the Ravens. I never like to pick the same teams on both of them. And so got burned with the Saints.
Yeah, but 2 weeks in a row, I hear what y'all are saying, but 2 weeks in a row, I just don't see New Orleans losing at home in New Orleans to Tampa and Cleveland to start the season.
If I'm making a prediction, I'm picking the Saints too, but, obviously you still got to come to play.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, all I'm saying that the Cleveland Browns aren't the same Cleveland Browns that we're like just the crap one. It's going to be a tougher game because they do have some talent. Now, again, coaching is only going to get them so far. You got to think superior coach, superior quarterback, like we talked about, JQ, always with Drew Brees. But like you said, I do agree. I mean, they're not as big as sausages that we talked about. I mean, Denzel Ward, up and coming, man, that really good play. They still got Jarvis Landry. I don't know what's happening with Josh Gordon. They do have some talent, man. So, again, maybe not enough to push them over there. But, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Like, they got some talent, man. So, it's not like we can crap on them like we always like crapping them before, too, man. So, but
New Orleans
is going to
score 40 points again.
All right.
They're
going to
score 40 points
again.
All right.
Rob, you think they're going to score 40 points, Rob?
I hope so. I think New Orleans. I think
said,
the Saints have a chance to at least put 30 on the board for sure. I think the Saints have a chance to at least put 30. I just can't see the Saints giving up more than 30 points to the Browns. I really can't.
Yeah,
I don't think
it's gonna happen. Well, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying Cleveland's gonna put 30 points. I'm just saying that they're more talented than we. I'm defense and offensively. I mean, like I said, it's gonna be.
I'm gonna say Saints 30, Cleveland 17 in this game.
Okay,
I'm gonna go 40-17.
47.
Right.
All right, we like it. All right, hey Rob, it's been a great show. Let's go ahead and wrap it up and let's get this thing done, man. Put a bow on it.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning in to another great show of Talking Sports with the 12th Man, making football great again. We're gonna be back at you on Tuesday night next weekend. Sorry, we slightly changed the date on you this week. We'll be back on you on Tuesday night next week, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. We obviously going to have a lot to talk about. This will be right in the heart of both the college football and NFL seasons. So we're going to definitely have a lot to cover, just like we did on this week. And stay tuned. We look forward to hearing from you all on the show on next Tuesday night. Good night.
And a little baseball because we're winding down the season. We got a lot of exciting pennant races going on. And, I picked LSU. And New Orleans this week, so I need to go and take a shower real fast to wash off a little of that dirt for picking too many of the New Orleans teams and the Jazz teams. So,
I picked Ohio State and the Bengals, man.
So you probably want to go take a shower too. So I
I don't hate Ohio State and the Bengals like you might hate them out.
I'm just messing with you, bro. I appreciate everybody for listening to the show, and then we'll holler at you next Tuesday. Good night.
Good night, people.
Again, gentlemen, fun time. We appreciate talking sports like we always do. Making football great again. That's what we want to do. Again, gentlemen, have a fantastic week. Again, Don't go too crazy.
Plus, JQ, Ohio State is to the Saints to what LSU is to the Falcons.
That's true. That's true.
Oh, man, you got your farm team, Rob? Is that your farm team, Ohio State?
That's our farm team.
Oh, man, I love it. Gentlemen, have a fantastic week. A lot of love. Shout out to my sister. Happy birthday. I'll call you tomorrow, big sis. A lot of love. Till the next time. Peace. Yep, yep.
Happy birthday, sis. I'll let y'all.
Yep, yep.
Good night, people. Happy birthday.